The Truth News Network. Albert Einstein once said, "We must think less and feel more." You know, for a clever guy, you gotta ask, what the hell was he thinking? In an ever more dangerous world, any plan that includes thinking less is a sure strategy for suicide. Think more. And at the blackboard for today's Chalk Talk, here's Dan Newman.
I gotta be honest with you, what the heck could we think less about? Oh my gosh, we have no choices but to think more, to try to puzzle through all that we're dealing with today in our nation and come up with some answers. Well, that's what we're going to try to do today. Who and what are we to believe? Now, let me start this by telling you this. When preparing this story, it became apparent very quickly there is no possible way to cover every element necessary to frame this entirely in just one account or one podcast. This is just part one of two parts that will be completed on Tuesday. We tried to get it all into one, folks, but there are too many elements that are important to you that you're going to want to hear and see. We can't leave any of them out. Please know this. There are so many elements in COVID-19, many of which you have not heard so far. And that includes events, people, and details that attach many people with everyday experiences that, when detailed, will cause a bunch of SMH. You're going to be shaking your head. Why? This tale includes numerous medical professionals, political leaders from dozens of countries, titans of American industry, multi-billionaires from the U.S. and elsewhere. Let me say this one thing about this two-part series. You will no longer trust those charged in your history with your medical care the same way as you did before COVID-19. Further, whatever trust you held for those in American politics will be attacked at the highest levels when all the layers of the onion are peeled away. Thinking about that, we may not be able to peel them all back because we just think we know some of them. It's probable we have identified only a few of those onion layers. Please know this entire story in both parts and audio reports are a compilation of input from dozens and dozens of news and medical organizations, hundreds of individuals that, like most of you, are screaming daily for the COVID-19 realities. We're putting it together for you, and it starts right now. Part one, no one wants to accept responsibility for COVID-19. No one wants to accept responsibility for incorrect information given to the public about COVID-19. No one wants to agree on the origin of COVID-19, its source, its symptoms, its victims, its purpose or purposes, or even if it's a living cell that can be killed. Yet everyone who should know the answers to all of these and that has the authority to lead us through its horrors want only to fight over who's in charge. Facts. Wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to read, watch, or listen to someone or several someones give us information about COVID-19 and to be comfortable to accept what they present as facts and to do so with confidence that those facts are really facts and not just someone else's truth? Today, we're going to find you some facts. Some are hidden jewels. Some are so obvious you'll giggle a bit when you finally see one of them. But some may make tears come to your eyes. And to get to the heart of this travesty, we'll break down the analysis in segments, several of which we'll just mention because as we have yet don't have sufficient evidence to verify their veracity. First, let's talk about the virus itself. To be honest about it, today it really makes no difference what the source of the virus is. I mean, think about it. That's one of those after-the-fact necessary elements we can and should pause before getting bogged down. I mean, we can come back to that later. Newspapers and television shows have burned much paper and screen time to give us example after example that, quote, conclusively conclude COVID-19 originated from bats and got into the food system in a wet market in Wuhan, or conclusively conclude it was created in a top-secret virological lab in Canada by two Chinese scientists who snuck out with the virus and raced back to Wuhan to make it available to the Chinese Communist Party to be used against us as a biological weapon. I know that's a long sentence, and it wouldn't be a correct title for a story, but we had to get it all in that one sentence. Or it got into the atmosphere through an accident at that lab in Wuhan. A scientist was unknowingly infected at the lab, transmitted it to others who then left China. They're doing that, released the virus to infect the world. You mean you don't care where the virus came from or if it was devised as an international biological weapon? Of course I do. But if I knew that today, we'd still be watching as infections spread out of control and more people are dying. Let's do that later. Well, let me ask you, if it's not a living organism, how can we kill it? I mean, you can't kill something that's not alive, right? Well, in case you didn't know this, this is important. Viruses, by most scientists, are considered to not be living cells. All living creatures have the biological capability to reproduce themselves. A virus has no reproductive system. The only method a virus has to replicate itself is to invade a healthy, normal cell and using that cell's reproductive capabilities to clone itself. That's its exclusive job when infecting a host, self-preservation, and it goes and invades the host cells so it can reproduce itself, and in going in, it breaks down the wall of those healthy cells and kills those cells. We cannot kill a virus, but there are numerous methods to attack it, break apart its outer shell, and therefore destroy its structure and its deadly capability. That's what is meant when someone says, we killed the viral cell. That can be accomplished by finding things in our lives already. We've got them all around us that can break through that shell, destroy what's inside it. Washing your hands, often using soap and hot water as an example, tears the virus cell apart. I got to be honest and say, the little bit we shared above are the only things we can say that have been proven, and of course universally accepted, to be true about COVID-19. How sad is that? Everything else in this whole thing, folks, is somebody's opinion. Wow. Let's examine the other important matters regarding COVID-19 and our lives within its terror that we must faced every day, and find facts regarding life on the other side of COVID-19, and hope and pray we get there. How about this? What successful medications are there to use against this pandemic, COVID-19? You've heard about hydroxychloroquine. How does it work, or does it work? Well, here are just a few story snippets about the use of the anti-malarial drug and its effectiveness. The first one. Hydroxychloroquine rated most effective coronavirus treatment poll of doctors finds. An international poll of thousands of doctors rated the Trump-touted anti-malaria drug hydroxychloroquine the best treatment for the novel coronavirus. Of the 2,171 physicians surveyed, you heard that number, 2,171 physicians that were surveyed, 37% rated hydroxychloroquine the most effective therapy for combating that potentially deadly illness, according to the results released last Thursday. The survey conducted by the global healthcare polling company Sermo also found that 23% of medical pros had prescribed the drug here in the United States, far less than in any other country. Outside the U.S., hydroxychloroquine was equally used for diagnostic patients with mild to severe symptoms, whereas in the U.S., it was most commonly used for high-risk diagnosed patients, the survey found. And then we go on. Dr. Anthony Cardillo said he has seen very promising results when prescribing hydroxychloroquine in combination with zinc for the most severely ill COVID-19 patients. He said this, every patient I prescribed it to has been very, very ill, and within 8 to 12 hours, they were basically symptom-free, Cardillo told Eyewitness News. So, clinically, I am seeing a resolution. Dr. Muhammad Alam, an infectious disease specialist affiliated with Plainville Hospital in Manhattan, said 81% of infected COVID patients he treated at three Long Island nursing homes recovered from the contagion. In this crisis, he said, I realized I had to do something. I realized if this was my dad, what would I do? And I would do anything I could to help him. Dr. Stephen Smith, founder of the Smith Center for Infectious Diseases at Urban Health, said that he is optimistic about the use of antimalarial medications and antibiotics to treat COVID-19 patients, calling it, quote, a game changer. Smith, who is treating 72 COVID-19 patients today, said that he has been treating everybody with hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin. We've been doing so for a while. He pointed out that not a single COVID-19 patient of his that has been on the hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin regimen for 5 days or more has had to be intubated. An international poll of thousands of doctors rated the Trump-touted anti-malaria drug hydroxychloroquine the best treatment for the novel coronavirus. 6,277 doctors participated in that poll. In Michigan, Democratic State Representative Karen Witsit contracted the disease and was given the drug. She said she felt relief from her symptoms in less than 2 hours. Today, she's COVID-19 free. 65% of physicians across the U.S. said they would prescribe the anti-malaria drugs chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine to treat or prevent COVID-19 in a family member. That's according to a new survey released by Jackson and Coker, one of the country's largest physician staffing firms. We at Truth News Network played interviews, a couple of those, with a New York State doctor who has now treated more than 1,400 patients using hydroxychloroquine with azithromycin and zinc. Of those patients, 1,400 patients, he split them into two groups. One of those under age 60 that had no contributing health issues, and those 60 plus years old, along with any other patient that had cancer, severe respiratory issues, cardiac history, or diabetes. 405 of those that he saw fell into that high-risk category. Based on normal COVID-19 statistics by the WHO and the CDC, of those 405 high-risk patients that he had tagged of his 1,400, approximately 20 should have died. Of those 405 classified as high-risk, all were treated with hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, and zinc. All were initially treated as outpatient. In other words, they didn't go into the hospital. Only 40 of those patients had to be admitted, of which only 4 required a ventilator, 2 put on vents died. All of the other 405 folks fully recovered. There's really no need to continue. There are thousands of other examples of patients treated with this drug that a massive percentage are well, most of which recovered very quickly. Does hydroxychloroquine work in every case? Absolutely not. But it certainly works in numerous cases, many of which were of such severity their physicians gave up on the recovery possibilities and were given the anti-malaria drug as only a last resort. By the way, 2 weeks ago, the FDA gave its approval to use hydroxychloroquine on COVID-19 patients in an inpatient situation only using a specific dosage. But that didn't last long. Incidentally, there are numerous other drugs in clinical trials right now, several of which show promise. Chief among those is a drug called remdesivir. It's hard to say. Remdesivir. What do we know about it? Well, what does the testing and the data say here? Here's Dr. Anthony Fauci.
That the data shows that remdesivir has a clear-cut, significant, positive effect in diminishing the time to recovery. This is really quite important for a number of reasons, and I'll give you the data. It's highly significant. If you look at the time to recovery being shorter in the remdesivir arm, it was 11 days compared to 15 days. And that's a p-value for the scientists who are listening of 0.001. Although a 31% improvement, doesn't seem like a knockout 100%. It is a very important proof of concept, because what it has proven is that a drug can block this virus. The mortality rate trended towards being better in the sense of less deaths in the remdesivir group, 8% versus 11% in the placebo group. It has not yet reached statistical significance, but the data needs to be further analyzed. Whenever you have clear-cut evidence that a drug works, you have an ethical obligation to immediately let the people who are in the placebo group know so that they could have access. And all of the other trials that are taking place now have a new standard of care. So we would have normally waited several days until the data gets further, dot the I and cross the T, but the data are not going to change. Some of the numbers may change a little, but the conclusion will not change. This drug happens to be blocking a enzyme that the virus uses, and that's an RNA polymerase, but there are a lot of other enzymes that the virus uses that are now going to be targets for this. This will be the standard of care, and in fact, when we look at the other trials we're doing, we were going to do trial with another antiviral. Actually, it isn't an antiviral, it's an anti-inflammatory, a monoclonal antibody. We're going to now compare the combination of remdesivir with this. So as drugs come in, we're going to see if we could add on that.
Well, I think it's a beginning. I thought Tony explained it really well. It's a beginning. It means you build on it. I love that as a building block. You know, just as a building block, I love that. But certainly it's a positive. It's a very positive event.
The FDA authorization of remdesivir came just 2 days after Gilead Sciences revealed it was aware of quote-unquote positive data from a clinical trial by the U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases of the antiviral drug as a COVID-19 treatment. Now, who runs that National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases organization? Who runs that? Well, Dr. Anthony Fauci. It seems a little odd to me that the drug manufacturer only heard there was some positive data before Fauci, in a White House briefing, said that it was at least temporarily approved by FDA for use in serious situations. Interesting. Anyway, according to the FDA's fact sheet, approval of remdesivir simply means that the drug may be effective in the treatment of patients. It has not approved it. No matter what you hear, it is not approved. The FDA also notes that remdesivir has not undergone the same type of review as an FDA-approved or cleared product, since the drug was already issued and is an emergency use authorization. One note for our partners, remdesivir is a long way from full FDA approval, and hydroxychloroquine has been approved and in the world pharmaceutical market for, 70 years. Remdesivir has just been allowed to be used as a drug of last resort by hospital physicians, and it's an IV drug, while hydroxychloroquine is in tablet form, taken orally. One more thing, incidentally, this might be noteworthy to you, especially if you're looking at the possibility of needing one of these two drugs. A single dose of hydroxychloroquine cost about 60 cents. One dose of remdesivir cost approximately $1,000. And by the way, you have to have one of those $1,000 doses every day. Those of you listening to this podcast and not reading the story, you're going to get a little angry at me right now because we're close to our normal 20-minute limit that we voluntarily uphold for our podcast listeners. And there's more to this story. There's actually another audio speaking to another doctor in New York about part of treating COVID-19 that has raised a lot of alarms amongst a bunch of doctors. The video to his report is on our website in this story, as is the story, as you know. And so if you want to watch the video, hear that doctor, please go to the story there. We're not going to spend the extra time. Most of our friends are listening to this audio podcast very early in the morning. You got to get on about your business. But you won't miss anything. Go to the story and see the story titled. It's about 3/4 of the way through. New York City doctor claims COVID-19 is not what they say it is. Well, let's wrap this up. There are far too many things that don't add up. Drugs that were told by experts that work suddenly don't work. COVID-19 is a pandemic of biblical proportions that might kill 20 million Americans. We're then told the mortality rate might reach 60 to 90,000. Nurses from all over are hired to rush to New York to help hospital workers devastated there by the mass number of COVID-19 patients, only to find themselves sitting in FEMA-rented hotel rooms for days on end because hospitals don't need them. Social distancing is the only way to save lives. We cannot allow ourselves to be infected by our family members, our neighbors, our fellow workers, or our friends, so we don't go to work, church, the store, baseball games, parties. 30 million Americans find themselves unemployed overnight with no notice, just basically to be told, we're going to give you $1,200 one time to help pay us your bills until we can restart the American economy. Does any of this seem reasonable? Does any of it sound in its structure or content or something that our government should have done, having so little knowledge of what we're facing? Does it smell a little about a political narrative or maybe even a plan to crash the U.S. economy? If so, gotta say, if that's their plan, it's a pretty good one. It's working. There is so much more to this story. You don't want to miss part two tomorrow. You're going to hear from several medical experts as well as financial and political experts that, if nothing else, will help you frame some reason into this COVID-19 picture you have in your head. We'll get a bit more into this in detail today, later, on TNN Live. That's a live streaming broadcast right here on this website from 9 to 11 a.m. Central. Join us if you can. You do so real simply. Click on that horizontal banner at the top of this page that says click now to listen. Click there at 9 o'clock. It'll take you to the live show. You can call in and chat at any time during the show by calling 866-37-TRUTH. Or 866-378-7884. If you can't make it then, don't miss tomorrow's story and podcast. Oh, forgot to say this. Tell a friend. Get somebody that you think wants to get in the know or needs to get in the know about COVID-19. You'll want them to get in on a little bit this too. Till we get together again. Thanks for sharing this today. And we'll see you later today, later this morning. Or if not, tomorrow morning, right here at Truth News Network, truthnewsnet.org.
Every day, in every way, life goes better with the truth. TNN, the Truth News Network.